Yeah, sure.
So,
I want to say that Elise and I are sponsoring also tonight in honor of the Mandelstams for hosting so much Torah and for spreading Torah. And it's a huge schus to have friends like you and a fan like you in the community. So it should continue for many years in happiness and good health. And the learning, in addition to everything that was just mentioned, should just be a schus for really everything we're davening for Yeshua's, for Klal Yisrael, from here of Yamenu. Okay, so it's almost Pesach. Good Chodesh, everyone. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And as we know, we have to start preparing for Pesach way before Pesach. Not just because there's a lot of practical things to do, but because there's a lot of halachas to know. And sometimes when we get into Pesach mode, we get into stressed out mode. I remember in the dentist chair where I went growing up, Ariella might remember this. I don't know if you went to Dr. Burson. Okay, fine. It was like right across the street from you. So Dr. Burson on his dentist chair would have all these signs like, it's not worse than Pesach cleaning, or like no kvetching zone, at least it's not Pesach. Like there are a lot of these like Pesach jokes. And you know, we all make Pesach jokes because it is very stressful. There's really a lot to do. Whether or not, you know, you're hosting or not hosting, there's still just a lot to prepare for. And I think specifically when it comes to Pesach, there are a lot of details and a lot of potential chumras that we'd really try to go all out, you know, for good reason, as we'll talk about a little bit. But it could also lead to a sense of perfectionism. And as a psychologist, I talk a lot about perfectionism when I work with my patients, but perfectionism is not just something that comes up in, let's say, clinical depression or clinical anxiety. Every person, to some degree, has a level of perfectionism and feeling like, you know, they're not going to feel good enough unless it's done well enough. And I think especially when it comes to Pesach, that tends to come up because of all the details of all the halachas. So what I want to talk about tonight is how in the messaging of Pesach itself, we see how we specifically are not supposed to have a perfectionistic mindset. And in order to, I think, really enjoy the holiday and really enjoy any aspect of Yiddishkeit and of keeping halacha, we have to have a healthy balance of, on the one hand, recognizing the importance of dikta halacha and keeping everything as best as we can, but at the same time, to recognize that we're only human and there's only so much that we could do. So I want to kind of highlight perfectionism from the Pesach perspective in really three realms. And one realm is, I would say, in the attitude of we're human and there's only so much that we could do as human beings. The second realm is in the dimension of seeing things in our life, and even though we want things to be ideal and perfect, we can't because that's just not the way the world works. And then the third is on more of a national level, that especially in the context of Geula and hoping for better times for Klal Yisrael and for the world, we also have to recognize that the sources indicate that it's not going to be perfect until that ultimate time, and we have to kind of embrace the process. So we'll start with the overall perspective of we're human, and Hashem knows that we're human. So it actually comes up probably most clearly in the context of Hilchos Pesach, in the context of Bedikas Chametz. So we all know that we have to, whether or not we're at home or not, we have to do some degree of cleaning out the home to make sure there's no chametz. And the Mishnah on Pesachim in Source Aleph says, "Ein choshishin shemagrora cholda mibayis labayis umimakom lamakom." So the Mishnah is saying that you might have thought, because the Mishnah talks about how you have to be careful when, you know, Baruch Hashem, we don't have as much of these issues nowadays where there are rats and weasels and, you know, mice around the house. We still struggle with that a little bit. But in the time of the Mishnah, it seemed to be like very commonplace. So the Mishnah talks about how you have to kind of check the holes where the mice are, because they might take chametz from your kitchen table or bring it into the hole. But in that context, the Mishnah says you don't have to worry that while you're checking one room, so the mouse is bringing food to the room next door. So when I'm done with this room, and then I go back to that room, I have to check it again, because maybe while I was in this room, the mouse brought it into that room. Right?
Children do that.
Okay, so that's a great point. So this the following phrase probably applies to children also. He says, because the imkain ein ladavar sof, which literally means, because if that was the case, then there's no end to that, right? You could be checking your house for chametz literally forever if you're constantly going back and forth, because maybe while I was in one room, Shua brought in Cheerios into the other room, right? So we do have to check every place where it is feasible that a child would bring it. And unfortunately nowadays, that probably is more. It spans really the whole house to some degree. But you have to check it once and then make sure nothing goes, you know, that room now is, you know, kosher l'Pesach. But you don't have to go back and forth because ein ladavar sof. So Chazal and the Torah, the Halacha, is sensitive to the fact that we can't drive ourselves crazy to the extent when it's ein ladavar sof. Another concept, another phrase that the Gemara uses, which is also quoted in many Psak Halacha Svarim. So the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, it's a little bit of a, you know, graphic example, but I think it really brings out the point. So the halacha is that if a person has excrement around, and this actually comes up halacha l'may so often when you have like a baby with like a dirty diaper, whether you could say Shema around, and that's not the sugya that we're going to be focusing on tonight. But the Gemara says that let's say there's excrement not on a, you know, in a baby's diaper or on the floor somewhere, but on someone's own body. So it says Amara Papa Soa Bimakoma. So if the excrement is in the place where a person should have cleaned and it's still there, asur lekrot kriyat shema. So then you're not allowed to say kriyat shema because it's around. So the Gemara says, hechi dami, idaniris, if it's in a place on the body which is actually, you know, visible, so pshitza, so that's obvious. You don't have to teach me a halacha like that, right? If it's around, you can't say shema. Idaloniris, but if it's not in a place which is seen, lo nitna Torah la malachei hasharis. In other words, that if it's not seen, like, there's only so much we could do, right? We're not malachim, right? And specifically, the Torah wasn't given to malachim. Whenever I see this Gemara, it makes me think of another famous Gemara in Shabbos, where it has this whole conversation, again, whether it's actually a conversation that happened or it's more of a metaphor, but it's a conversation between Hashem and the malachim. And the malachim are saying, before Matan Torah, why are you giving this spiritual entity, this amazing Torah, to these mortals? Right? You should keep it up here in Shemayim. So Hashem turns to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was there also. And he says to Moshe, answer them. So Moshe thinks of, okay, so how am I going to argue with this? And Moshe says, okay, angels, do you have parents? And they say, no. So he says, okay, so do you have to keep the mitzvah, keep it avayim? And they said, no, I guess not. He said, do you guys eat? He said, no. Okay, so do you have to keep the halacha of vasar v'chala? Right? Again, he goes on. And the punchline of that Gemara is that the Torah is specifically given to mortals because we're not perfect and we need the Torah to guide us and help perfect us. So what this line is saying is that the Torah is not given to malachim. And we can't expect ourselves to be malachim. And just, again, this is not our main topic, but this comes up in a lot of different halachas. There's a Ramban that actually quotes this Gemara when it comes to, which is very relevant, obviously, to a women's shir, about going to the mikvah, the mitzvah to go to a mikvah, and how sometimes people get so obsessive. Of course, you have to do whatever the halacha says. But to go to such a degree that, like, it's not even rational anymore. That's where the Ramban says that the Torah wasn't given to Malachi Asharis. The other example is about washing hands to make sure that it's clean. As you could imagine, someone who treats, you know, OCD, which is a very distressing psychological condition, a lot of times I quote these sources. Not that these sources itself could help someone just, okay, you know, you're right. I don't have to wash my hands 100 times before I dive in. But it just gives a context that the Torah doesn't expect that from us. So I think that's just, as a general perspective, as we go into Pesach, we of course have to do our best, but not to the point where we're driving ourselves crazy because ein ladavar sof. Otherwise, there would be no end to it. And lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharis. The Torah wasn't given to malachim, and Hashem recognizes that. So that's a segue to, I think, more of a specific, you know, in our lives, focusing on how things are not going to always be exactly the way we want them, but that part of our job is to embrace and to be grateful for those things that we do have. So there's a very famous Yerushalmi Now, we all learn when we're, you know, probably in kindergarten or first grade, that why do we have four cups at the Seder? Why are there four cups of grape juice, four cups of wine? So, minayin la'arba kosas b'pesach. So, Amar Rabbi Yochanan keneged arba ge'ulos. Because of the four ge'ulos. So, how do you translate the four ge'ulos? Anyone? Just call it out. Okay, right. So, those are the actual ones. But how do you translate the word ge'ulos? Right, right. Redemptions, right. Salvations, right. There are four salvations. The four words that are used at the beginning of Parshas Va'era, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe that I'm about to do this amazing thing and take B'nai Israel out of Mitzrayim. So the Torah Tzmima, which back in the day when we first started giving Chabura at this house to the men, we used to just do Torah Tzmima every week, but then I ran out of good Torah Tzmimas, so we just shifted to just, you know, anything I felt like talking about. But the Torah Tzmima is an amazing sefer. It's from Baruch HaLevi Epstein, and he basically goes through the Chumash, and underneath, like Chumash and Rashi, he just quotes all the Gemaras that are relevant to those psukim. So it's kind of like having like the Gemara right there in the Chumash, which is, you know, a really, really great read. So he points out something. I didn't quote the whole thing, but when we're kids, how do you usually call Vilzeiti, Vitzati, Vigalati, Vilakati? The four Lashonos of Geula, right? So what does Lashonos mean? The languages of Geula. So what the Torah Tzmiya points out is that even though many sources quote it as that, it's not actually what the Yerushalmi says, right? And that's why I was trying to highlight it. It doesn't say these are the four words used to describe Geula. It's Keneged Arba Geulos. There were actually four individual, it sounds like, individual Geulos, individual redemptions. So the Torah Tzmiya says, Ava Keneged Arba Geulos, Yispar Inyan Hetev, Yan kishina ayin yafe nimsa dalit in yonim shonim bedalit mamarim elu asher kol prat uprat hu inyan shalem kishahu laatzmo b'shaba hoda miyuchedes. So what the Torah Tzmiya is about to do is he's going to explain that it's not just four different words used to describe Hashem taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. For that, you wouldn't have to have four cups just for four words used. It was each one of these words represented on its own a salvation. And he's going to go through each one. He says, Kiba mama harishon vehotseisi, so that whole phrase is vehotseisi eschem mitachat sivlo mitzrayim. Mavor shiutziyam HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitachat sivlo mitzrayim. Klomar sheyakel aleihem avodasam. Aba ein b'mashma sheyachashufu b'kulam mei avodasam. Meaning that the first thing was that Hashem took away our suffering. Hashem could have taken away our suffering and we still had to work for Paro. Meaning that the fact that Hashem took away our suffering and it wasn't so cruel anymore, it wasn't backbreaking, that itself is already reason to say thank you. And that's the Vehotseiti, because that's saying that you took us out from the suffering. Then furthermore, Va'al zeh hosef v'amarti v'hitzalti eschem me'avodosam v'hainu shlo yavdu klal. Meaning, so the second thing is that not only Hashem did you take away our suffering, so it wasn't work that was so painful, but we didn't have to work at all for Paro anymore, right? We used to have to work, you know, 20-hour shifts, and now we don't have to. Omnam gam la'achar elahan achos adayim hem avdei Paro. But even if Hashem would have just taken away the suffering and made us not work anymore, we still would have been under the subjugation of Paro. We had to follow his laws, right? We didn't have our own independence. So Hosef Amar Vega'alti Eschem. So the third one is Vega'alti. Hashem actually redeemed us. He took us out from under Paro's servitude. But even with that, even if Hashem would have taken us away from the work and we wouldn't have to been under Paro's subjugation, we still maybe wouldn't have been any chosen nation. So for that, Alzeh Hosef Lomar v'lakachti eschem lilam v'yisi lachem lelokim. V'kevan shakim v'vor pashat shal ko prat uprat shabo mali yisera mechayavim behoda'a lachin tiknu da'ud kosos shal hoda. So I think this is, it's like a paradigm shift in terms of how you think of the Dalar Kosos, right? So when your kid says that, you know, why do we have Dalar Kosos? Because of the four Lashonos, Shel Geula, the four words, you could remember, it's not just the four words used. It's the four actual things that individually would have been enough of a reason to think of Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's four separate hodos. So what does this remind us of? What else at the Seder? Right, Dayenu, exactly. Right, the centerpiece of Magid, which is really all about telling the story and about thinking of Kodesh Baruch Hu for everything he did, is Dayenu, which is exactly this point, that when we develop this sense of gratitude, it's really about looking at things individually. Right, it's very easy to say, and this is where I want to bring it back to the perfectionism, that it's very easy to say, okay, I have X, Y, and Z, but like it really would be great if I had ABC. Or like I can't feel fulfilled unless I have ABC, right? Or like I did a really good job, you know, teaching my kid for his bar mitzvah parsha, but like if only he wouldn't have like messed up those three psukim, or like those three words, right? So it's, again, this could be thought of as just like a general Sameach B'chelko, but I think specifically when it comes to gratefulness and when it comes to a tendency to have this perfectionistic mindset, I think this idea of recognizing each individual ke'ula, I think really brings this point home. And this theme, I think, comes up throughout the whole Seder night, because there are so many aspects of the Seder that really have this duality to it, right? That on the one hand, they have something that's, you know, really great that we can appreciate. And then at the same time, it has this aspect that, yeah, but like, what about that thing? And like, if I focus on that thing, then it'll probably take away from how much I'm really grateful right now. I mean, even the general question, almost every year at the Seder, someone asks this question, which I think is a great question. It almost sounds a little bit like, you know, like, oh, like, you know, you can't ask that question, but I think it's a great question. And the question is like, if Hashem loves us so much, so why do you put us in Mitzrayim to begin with? Right, like, oh, Hashem's so amazing. He did all these miracles, and we got Geula. But like, why do we need to be in Sheba to begin with? So a lot of important answers to that question. But I think that duality itself of like, we could focus so much on the positive, like, yeah, Hashem did great things, but didn't Hashem like also bring us to beginning? So like, why do we have to be so grateful? So that dynamic, that duality, and I guess the fancy word for that in psychology is a dialect, a dialectical behavioral therapy, is when you're able to help a person kind of hold two opposing things at once, right? So instead of like, you know, my mom is the worst, I hate her, I can't stand her, and like I kind of do like when she like makes me dinner, it's I really like my mom for all the good things she does, and she really upsets me when she does X, Y, and Z. Right? So it's kind of like it's breaking from like the extreme, and it's saying like both these things could be true. And I think that's a very important theme throughout many of the mitzvos of the Seder. So one example, which is one of my personal favorite mitzvos, is the charoset, because I happen to love, you know, eating charoset, and I just think what it represents and bringing out both these points. So the Mishnah is actually the Gemara, but it's quoting the Mishnah that says that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Tzadok, a Tana, says the charoset is not just this cute thing, it's actually a mitzvah. And I'm not going to get into this whole sugya, but the Rambam actually says that according to this opinion, you would say a bracha. The same way that you say a bracha of alachivas matzah and alachivas maror, you would say a bracha alachivas charoses. Because according to this opinion in the Mishnah, it's actually a mitzvah. So what is the mitzvah? So Rabbi Levi Omer, zecher la tapuach. So it's to remember the tapuach. So where did the tapuach come up in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's a tough one. Anyone know? I mean, it's very tangential to the story. It's like, unless you saw Eskimar, you probably wouldn't necessarily know this. But the pasuk says in Shir Hashirim, tachas hatapuach or artircha, which literally means that underneath the apple tree, you were seduced or I was seduced, etc. And the Gemara goes on to say that even though a lot of the men in Mitzrayim wanted to just give up, why should we have children anymore? Our boys are being thrown into the Nilus, right? Like the famous story of Amram saying to Yocheved, what's the point of having kids? And then Miriam comes along and says, no, you have to have a child. Your child is going to be the Goel, right? Which is, of course, was Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara goes on to say that tachas hatapuach, under the apple tree, probably more means metaphorically, the wives convinced their husbands to be with them, and they were able to have children. So because of that bitachon, and not giving in, not giving up, that's the zecher la tapuach, according to the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, zecher letit. No, it's not because of the tapuach. It's because of the cement. Right? This is probably the more, there's probably a good reason why the kindergartners don't learn the first reason. But the second reason is what everyone comes home with, right? It's because of the cement. So Amar Abaye, Hilchok Tzarech L'Kahuye, Vitzarech L'Smuchei. So you have to have two qualities of the charoset to make sure you cover both these reasons. That on the one hand, we're thinking about this amazing Mesiris Nefesh, that the women and the men, they had the belief that they have to continue the nation, this, like, you know, inspiring thought. And also about the cement, that we, you know, had to do backbreaking labor and put together bricks for no reason, right? So those two things together, we have to both have it, le-kehuye, zeche le-tapuach. So it's hard to translate exactly what that word means, but it means it has to be tart. I think in the English translation, the Sapphire translated it as tart. It has to have like a little bit of like a spunk to it, which parenthetically, I'm not saying that, you know, this is normative psak, but I've heard of Herschel Schlechter say a few times that he thinks tapuach doesn't really mean apple. We all use apples for our charoset, which, like, this is like blasphemy to say you shouldn't use apples. So, like, I'm not saying not to use apples. But Herschel Schlechter actually says that tapuach throughout Tanakh is probably not an apple. It's more of like a citrus fruit. So Herschel Schlechter actually thinks even if you're going to use apples, you should put some like citrusy thing in there, like a lemon or something like that. And that actually is consistent with the Gemara because an apple is not really tart. Maybe it is a little bit. But he feels that like something sour, like someone that has that citrusy aspect to it. So that's to remember the tapuach. But tzarech l'smuche, you have to make it thick also, which is why we also often put in some almonds or some other things to make it thick to remember the clay. So this is, I think, a perfect example where we bring those two things together. That on the one hand, we have, you know, we have to remember the difficult times, we have to remember the cement, but in that same bite of the cement, we also remember the tapuach. And this also comes up in the fact that the minhag is to have red wine, or if you can't have wine, to have grape juice at the Seder for the four cups. So the Taz quotes two reasons why we have red wine. So first he says, "Dechsev altera yayin ki yisadam, shma mina shaha amdum domes humala." So the Gemara talks about how red wine is considered more chashuv, right? Based on this pasuk, and that's why we try to have red wine, you know, for all the special occasions that we want to enhance by having wine. We try to have red. Of course, exceptions to that under the chuppah, because God forbid if the red wine spills on the wedding dress. That's like a real, you know, the post can talk about that. So that's why we tend to have white wine there. If a person really prefers white wine, you know, over red, so definitely a person could have white. But ideally, you're supposed to have red because of this pasuk that says that it's more chashuv. Red wine's more chashuv. So this would fit in that we're supposed to be, you know, b'nei chorin, right? We're supposed to have wine because we're free. And part of celebrating freedom is to have wine, to celebrate. And red wine is the most chashuv way to celebrate that freedom. But then, a second reason. But he also says, v'hikbid hatur kan b'dalar kosos. Sorry, it's not the tour. Who's that? I'm not sure who the tesbav is. I don't think it's the tour. But he says, he quotes someone who says, kan b'dalar kosos b'zah, b'lo kele b'shimon ayesh reid vav, de'yesh od remez la'edom zecher le'dam, shahayaparo shochei b'nei Yisrael. So it's not just because red is more chashuv, and when we're celebrating, we're supposed to have this chashivas. It's also to remember the fact that Paro spilled so much Jewish blood. So again, it's the same, like it's the same exact idea that in the same sip that we're remembering and we're having this amazing moment of chayrus, intertwined into that is this remembering of the blood. And I think again, when we think about how to focus on appreciation and focus on all that Hashem does for us, it's very easy to sometimes get zeroing in on the negative aspects, even though, of course, there were negative aspects. That's part of the zikaron of what we're trying to remember in the charoses and the wine. But to kind of remember also the positive aspect that's coming out from that same experience. There's a famous, I didn't put on the source sheet, but there's a beautiful idea from the Shemen HaTov. Shemen HaTov is Rev Mickey Weinberger, who's kind of related to us. Our brother-in-law is a great uncle. He was nifter a number of years ago. But he has a beautiful, beautiful sermon on Haggadah and on Parsha. If anyone listens to Rabbi Yisach of France, he quotes Shemen HaTov a lot. So Shemen HaTov has a beautiful piece about Halach Ma'anya, where really we're starting off all of Magid. The whole Haggadah is introduced by Halach Ma'anya. And he says the halachmania itself is so dialectical in this way. That on the one hand, we're saying halach ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread. And then literally 4 words later, kol dech ben yesev yecho, anyone who wants to come, come and join. Usually when you're trying to be like a poor person, you're not inviting the whole community over to come join, right? So on the one hand, we're saying we're poor. On the other hand, we're saying, but we feel like, you know, the wealthiest people in the world because we're free. And then we have this back and forth. We say hashata hacha. Now we're here. Vashana ba be Yerushalayim. Hashata avde. Now we're slaves. Vashana ba b'nei chorin. So we're kind of holding on to both of these aspects because that's really setting the tone for the whole Seder experience. Again, it's having both, recognizing that, you know, not everything was always great, that there were definitely difficult times, but at the same time to kind of focus in and to realize that there's so much to be grateful for and to thank Hashem for as well. So far we have, I guess, a general perfectionism attitude of realizing that we're not human and we're not malachim, we are human and Hashem expects us to be human, and there's only so much that we could do in terms of keeping halacha the best way possible. And then in terms of the way we think about our lives and everything that we have, things aren't perfect. We go through hard times. That's part of life. That's part of our national destiny. That's part of, unfortunately, our own individual suffering, unfortunately some more than others. But to really zero in on Pesach, the same way we zero in on the four Lashonos of Geula, to focus on the positive, even with all the negative. And then the last element that I want to highlight is, I think, the national destiny and focusing on the fact that even though things are never smooth for Klal Yisrael, especially we're living right now B'Shas Melchama, but to recognize that the Seder itself reminds us that redemption is really a process, and it's not going to always be hunky dory. So there's a beautiful piece from J.J. Schachter, who he has a lot of beautiful pieces on Pesach and on the Haggadah. But I found this Haggadah that was written probably like 15 years ago. It was different YU Rashi Yeshiva and YU Rabbanim that put together Divrei Torah. So the following segment is based on a beautiful essay from J.J. Schachter. And he points out that throughout the Seder, there is one character that keeps on being alluded to. And it's not someone that you would necessarily think of. It's not Moshe Rabbeinu, right? We know Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not really, it's only there once, right? Quoting a pasuk by Az Yashir. It's not Aaron HaKohen, it's Yosef. And that there's a lot of allusions to Yosef and the story of Yosef throughout the Seder. And the first one that he quotes is in the very beginning of the Yosef story. So the pasuk says that Yaakov gave him a ketones pasim. So Rashi says, Lashon kli melas, it's a beautiful linen garment, kemo karpas utecheles. So the only time in all of Tanakh that the word karpas is used, anyone know what this is from? Karpas utecheles? I'm not going to put Mrs. Gortz on the spot. Mrs. Gortz was just teaching this.
I was going to say, wasn't it Esther?
Yeah, it's an Esther, right. So when it says that Mordechai was given all this royal garments after he, you know, got elevated, you know, towards the end of the Purim story, he was wearing chur karpas utzcheles. He was wearing all these lavish, beautiful garments. So karpas, Rashi's quoting, that karpas is some sort of beautiful garment. And on the word pasim, right, the ketonet pasim, Rashi is saying it's from that same language, that Yaakov gave Yosef this beautiful pas, this, you know, beautiful garment. Kmo ha-ketonet pasim, the Tamar of Amnon quotes another example of that. So we already have an allusion to Yosef just from the fact that we have karpas. And the Rabbeinu Manoach even says that why do we have the dipping of the karpas at the beginning of the Seder? He says, "V'anu noagin b'karpas zecher leketonas hapasim." She'asa Yaakov avinu liYosef asher b'sibasa misgalgal hadavar v'yardu avasinu l'mitzrayim. So says Rabbeinu Manoach, why do we start off the Seder with a dip? Because what does the dip remind us of? When the brothers threw Yosef in the pit, and they tried to trick their father Yaakov that, oh, it wasn't them, of course, it was some animal that attacked him. So what did they do? They took the ketonet pasim, and they dipped it into blood. And they said, Nebuch, a wild animal, attacked Yosef. And this is his ketonet pasim with all the blood. So says Rabbeinu Menach, we start off the Seder with the dipping of the pas, or the kar pas, into the salt water to remember, as a zecher, to the dipping of the ketona pasim. So why do we have Yosef? Why do we have to remember this? So Rabbeinu Menach says this. If you think about it, the whole story of Sheba Mitzrayim all started because of the fight between Yosef and his brothers. The fact that his brothers hated him and the fact that they threw him into the pit was what ended up causing him to be sold, to be brought down to Mitzrayim, which ended up making the brothers have to go down there. Well, not to go down there, but they had to go down there to get food. And then Yosef ended up keeping them there. So because he was down there, because he got sold, that's what all started this process of the Shibud. So that's why we start with the dipping. Where else do we see Yosef's story? So there's a Mishnah that says, Imsachim, it's a Braisa, but it's stated by the authors of the Mishnah, the Tanaim. It says, Kol echad v'echad nosen pischo ba'oro u'mafshil le'achorav. So that every person, when they would bring the meat of the Korban Pesach, again, nowadays, unfortunately, we don't have the meat of the Korban Pesach, but what they used to do is they would put the Korban Pesach meat into the ore, into the hide, and they would kind of, mafshel l'achorav means they would fling it behind their back, right? They would carry the meat behind their back. So Amar of Ilish, why is this necessary? This is like the Tayaus. So what's the Tayaus? Rashi says, Derech socharim yishma'elim huzeh. So the way that the Arab merchants used to carry their meat was that they used to fling it behind their back. Okay, who cares? Like, why? Because the Arab merchants carry their meat this way, that's why you, for the Korban Pesach, should also carry your meat this way. So in this essay, Rav Schachter quotes from Isaac Bernstein. He says it fits into the same idea. Because who sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim? Who brought Yosef down to Mitzrayim? The Yishmaelim. Right? The pasuk says that, I think it was first the Midyanim took him out, it sounds like, and then the Midyanim gave him to the Yishmaelim. And the Yishmaelim then brought him down to Mitzrayim. So again, the story of Yosef going down to Mitzrayim is alluded to in the halachos of the Seder. Not on the sheet, but another allusion to this, that even though the most famous reason why we have the Dawud Kosos is what we quoted, it was the four Geulos, the Yerushalmi actually has a few other opinions. And one of the other opinions is because of the four times that it mentions the word Kos in Paro's dreams. Right? So Paro's dreams that he needed to get interpreted, that Yosef ended up interpreting for him, it says the word Kos four times, which is talking about the Sar Hamashke that's bringing the cup and it has a fly in it, etc. So because of the four times that it says kos in Paro's dream that Yosef interpreted, that's why we have four cups at the Seder. Again, who cares? What does the Paro's dream have anything to do with the Seder? But according to this approach, it's part of the same thing. Because Yosef's story is so integral to the Mitzrayim story, as the Rabbeinu Menach said, it's because of the fact that it was Yosef in that story that led to the Shibud. But the way that Rav Schachter says it is a different twist. It's not just that we need to remember Yosef's story because of the fact that that Sinas Chinam and that, you know, fight led to the Shibud. He says because Yosef's story is really what the Jewish history story is all about. And it was so fundamental to remember the Yosef story at the night of the Seder. But the night of the Seder is not just about Yetzias Mitzrayim. True, there's the connection between Yosef's story and specifically the Sheba Mitzrayim story. But it's more than that. The Seder night is about Jewish history, right? V'hisha amda, right? She lo echad bilvad amad alein alecha oseinu. Every generation, unfortunately, Jewish history repeats itself. So we have to remember the Yosef story because it's a paradigm for Jewish history. And that's why Moshe was makbid so much in the last source, in source Hey, v'yikach Moshe es atmos Yosef imo, right? That Moshe Rabbeinu, there were a million and one things Moshe Rabbeinu could have been doing as Klal Yisrael was rushing out of Mitzrayim. But Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader, he was running straight to get Yosef's bones, atmos Yosef. And the puzzle goes on to say, because he promised Yosef that his body would actually be buried in Eretz Yisrael, which to this day it is. Of course, it's buried in Shechem. So Moshe Rabbeinu was so machmed to make sure. So why was it so important that Yosef came with them? Because Yosef's story is the Jewish story. As the Medrash Tanhuma says, and this is quoted actually by Rav Goldwicht, Rav Schachter in this article quotes Rav Goldwicht, who quotes this Medrash. Never would have seen this Medrash if not for it quoted here. Masha Eira le Yosef Tovos, Eira le Tzion Tovos. That all the good that has happened to Yosef will happen to Tzion also. Meaning that whatever happens to the Yosef story is going to happen for Klal Yisrael. So what does that mean? Why is the Yosef story indicative of Klal Yisrael's story? So the way Rav Schachter formulates it is so beautiful. He says that we often think of Geula, of redemption, as kind of going up a ladder or going up a ramp or kind of going up that mountain, like one step at a time, like we're getting closer and we're pushing and we're doing the mitzvahs we need to do and we're doing what we need to do to strengthen Eretz Yisrael. We're trying to kind of move closer and closer until we get up, 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 and then we're finally there. But what the Yosef story teaches us is that Geula is not linear, as Rav Schachter says. It's not like, okay, it's getting better, better, better until we're there. It's up, and then it's down, and then it's up, and then it's down. And that's exactly what the Yosef story is. Yosef started off on top. He was like oblivious to almost anyone around him. He was Yaakov's favorite, Ketona Pasim, having dreams of everyone bowing down to him. Before he knows it, he's at the bottom of a pit with snakes and scorpions. Then he's out of the pit. He seems to be doing okay in Mitzrayim. All of a sudden, he's accused of doing something with Eishes Potiphar. Back to the pit. Back to the jail. Then he's able to interpret dreams. Back on top, head of Mitzrayim. The Geula of Yosef is a story of ups and downs. It's not linear. And that's why it's so important that Yosef comes up throughout the Seder also. Because when we think of hoping for our own Geulos, and the Geulos that happen generation after generation, we have to keep in mind, again, to counter this perfectionism, to think that, oh, like, just to take it nowadays, like, this can't be, you know, the Geula, because it's so, everything's such a mess, and the politics are a mess, and, you know, everything seems to be, you know, chaotic, and we had this horrible, you know, almost Shoah, or probably is what was a type of Shoah on October 7th. How could this be the Geula process? But I think what this is showing us is that Geula is not linear. Geula goes up and down, and it should give us chizuk that, you know, there's not a perfect process towards Geula, and this is true whether it's our own individual geulas that we're davening for, and many of the svarim talk about how we have a bracha in Shmona Esrei, right in the middle of Goel Yisrael, which on the one hand could sound like it's talking about like the big redemptions of bringing Mashiach, but that's a lot of that's focused more on the later brachas in Shmona Esrei, right? Like the Mili Shleim Ircha, Asamach David Avdecha, Goel Yisrael. Many svarim write that it's talking about our own personal gulos that we're all davening for. So whether it's our own individual gulos, you know, to remember that the road's not going to be perfect, there's going to be ups and downs, but I think for our national destiny also, you know, things aren't always linear. There's ups and downs in the gula process. So as we're starting Nisan, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah famously says that Kishem, just the same way that Benisa Nigalu, that we had the gulos Mitzrayim in Nisan, we're also going to be asidin lehiska. We're also going to have the future geula in Nisan. So if we have in mind, again, these three points about realizing that we're only human, we do the best we can in halacha, but we should go into Pesach with an enjoyment and a really geschmack, so we could appreciate the beauty of Pesach and not be totally exhausted and, you know, too stressed. To also recognize the bracha that we have in our life and to realize that our life's not perfect, but to focus on the positive aspects. And also to realize that the Geula process that hopefully we're in now, that hopefully will be finished soon, has its ups and downs, but we should see the final steps of it with the coming of Mashiach. I'm here, Bimeno. Thank you for having me.